From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, UCB Comedy Creative Director Nate Russell. This is episode number 17 of this podcast. Thanks for tuning in. As always, this podcast is conversations with comedy filmmakers about their unique work in a converging digital media landscape. Whew, that's a mouthful. Ultimately, we're talking to cool comedy filmmakers about what they do and why they do it. And today we have a couple of really great guys and super funny, talented guys, Marshall Stratton and James Coker, otherwise known as Coker and Stratton. And we talked to them about their work as a comedy duo with a very unique perspective on making a web series in what is an incredibly polluted web series environment. How many times do you go online and there's a thousand, your whole Facebook feed, right? If you're still on Facebook like the old people, your whole Facebook feed is a bunch of web series promos or links from people who you know. If you're in comedy, there's a lot of that happening, right? And online, it is impossible to get any traction in an oversaturated, you know, environment for comedy videos. But Coker and Stratton found a way to do it. And they actually did it in a very analog sort of way. Last year, these are guys who have been making comedy videos together for a few years. They've been making comedy in New York City on the stage together for almost 5 years. We talked to them about that. But about a year ago in early 2015, they made a web series called The Other Kennedys. It's a high-concept web series. They traveled to Maine to shoot the web series. And then they took it to comedy festivals and have actually, in that peer-to-peer analog, offline sort of way, made bigger inroads than they would have if they just released it online and walked away from it. And they did it with a very specific strategy. And it's worked. So I wanted to sit down with them and learn how thought out that approach was, honestly, and whether it was intentional, which turns out it was, spoiler alert, or whether it was just dumb luck, which of course it was not. And delightful guys. Really enjoyed sitting down with them. Super funny guys. Let's jump into it. Our conversation with Coker and Stratton. Guys, thanks so much for doing this.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. It's great.
So, like, I've got a list of awards here that you guys have won in the last year for your series.
Sounds cool to hear.
Official, well, I guess some of these are just official selection, but official selection at Dublin's Dub Web Fest. New York Television Festival, where you guys also won. Was it an audience award? I don't have that.
No, we won best actors in a comedy, which is hilarious
because
we were just ourselves.
Yeah, uh-huh. And we also won a Comedy Central Development Award.
Development Award winner. Okay, so that was New York TV Fest because I had that down here separately. Mm-hmm. You also played at NYC Web Fest.
Yes,
at the Northside Festival where you also
won a special mention.
That's mm-hmm. right.
Apparently it was very close, real nail biter, lost to another series.
A big shout out to Todd Bieber for the help there. Yeah.
Todd Bieber and Josh Poole.
Yeah, Josh Poole, Todd Bieber.
It's good to stack the jury.
Yeah.
And a finalist at the Just for Laughs Comedy Pro Pitch Your Project in Montreal as well.
Yes.
So you guys have been really active with this series as far as like these places don't just knock down your door, right? You've got to go out and pursue all of these things.
Yeah.
So I guess like, so you make a series, we'll go into like that process in a second, but you make a series like what has been your approach in the release that has hopefully like led to this success?
I will say we've made a point to try to get as much mileage out of the 11 minutes of footage that are online right now.
Yeah.
We made 8 promos that were all like 15 seconds a piece, and then we made 10 episodes, all which are around a minute long.
Uh-huh.
And once we put it out there, first of all, it was the promos. We were just trying to get our friends excited about it before we ever released it. Like we took our time editing.
Yeah.
We made 8 promos and like sort of slowly released them like as the weeks progressed.
And it almost was its own web series itself, the promos, because there were so many of them.
How much lead time did you give that?
I think we started probably a month or so.
Yeah, a month and a half.
Yeah, like we released them in March, but I think we started like beginning of February releasing promos. And by the end of February, people thought it was like, this was a bit. People thought it wasn't a real web series.
Yeah.
So they were like super surprised when it came out. You know, once we actually released it, some people release everything at once.
Yeah.
We spaced it out. We released initially 2 episodes
yeah.
and then decided for the next 4 weeks. We were going to release one on Tuesday and Thursday.
Okay. So twice, twice a week for like basically over a month.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if that necessarily was the best strategy because I know a lot of people will, you know, go to the site once and they'll watch whatever's there. They're not going to make a point to go out and revisit it. But Marshall and I really probably used every promotional tool possible to try to get people to watch it. We both like sent out MailChimp emails.
And big shout out, big shout out to MailChimp.
Big shout out to MailChimp. You know, a lot of people unsubscribed immediately.
Yeah. A lot of ex-girlfriends be like, hey, take me off your list. I don't care about your web series.
Were you guys MailChimp guys before? You signed up for MailChimp just to blast out about it.
Exactly.
Just to blast, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
We've all got to join MailChimp sometime.
God bless. Yeah. I mean, it's part of the brand, you know?
Yeah. And then we just emailed to a lot of people we knew that were, you know, doing write-ups on web series.
Yeah.
Luke Kelly Klein has been like a great advocate for us and a lot of other comedians
from Splitsider.
Luke Kelly Klein from Splitsider. And I think he was the first person to do a write-up on us.
Yeah.
And that started giving us like a lot of traction. Also, Olivia Armstrong at Decider was really helpful.
Teresa Lee at Betches loved this.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Big shout out to her.
And so I think what's really nice about being in this comedy community, like we have a lot of people that are making their own content, but we have a lot of people now that are, for lack of a better term, they're tastemakers.
Sure.
They're the ones that are like writing these articles and telling what the rest of the country, like what they should be watching and what they should be reading.
Yeah. So when you guys were putting this stuff out, you guys have a YouTube channel.
We have a YouTube channel.
And that's where you pushed it.
Yeah. So we, before that there was just, various sketches on the YouTube channel, but we built out a website. So we were trying to drive most of the traffic to the website, theothercandidates.com. Check it out.
Yeah. Check it out. Still relevant.
Yeah.
So it was mainly the website, we just got a Squarespace account and built it ourselves and it was pretty easy.
Yeah.
And then posted the YouTube, embedded the YouTube videos on the website. Right.
And do you have this sort of, so at this point, because also some of this festival success and sort of what it does for your career doesn't necessarily translate into YouTube views. How have the videos done on YouTube specifically?
I think they've done pretty well. I think the most successful video has like around 10,000 views, which I know like...
Which in YouTube terms isn't great.
It's a drop in the bucket. Yeah. It's like really nothing.
I mean, it's no like tutorial numbers, but I think it's pretty good numbers for a web series.
No makeup tutorial numbers.
Yeah. Right.
Or bow tie tutorials. Those guys are killing it.
Oh, those guys are crushing
raking
it.
In
So yeah, I mean, I think for us, like it wasn't, getting views on YouTube is huge and like it'd be great, but I think we were more interested in getting the right people to see it and making something good.
Yeah.
I mean, not necessarily something that was gonna like go viral.
Sure. That makes sense. As far as like that strategy you were talking about, you said, well, maybe that wasn't the best strategy. Why did you guys decide on that release strategy?
I think because we have friends that have released web series and people have tried different strategies.
And we were releasing the promos a little bit at a time, I think we also should like follow up doing the whole series a little bit at a time, just so it's not like we drop it all at once and then the views are kind of scattered for each one. It's like something to look forward to. I think there's still a market for that in the web of like something to look forward to, not just like everything is binge worthy.
Seems pretty measured, right? Because it's like, if you're saying that you did 8 promos in a month leading up and then essentially 10 episodes in a month afterwards, that feels like, so you're really releasing over 20 days almost of 60.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, and then when you factor in weekends, that's a pretty consistent sort of like output.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sort of like holding some regular, also for you guys, it's probably like a Facebook post every couple of days or something.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And I think for us, we wanted to, keep it active as long as we could, as opposed to just like sending out an email blast, posting something on Facebook, and then leaving it.
Yeah.
And
just
sort of leaving it out in the wild to fend for itself.
Yeah, because it was kind of the first project we had done that like featured us and not like goofy outfits and wigs and like big sunglasses, it was something that like was us you know, extreme versions of ourselves.
Sure.
Us on camera, like being, you know, like characters we like to play.
Yeah.
And it's something we wanted to get the most mileage out of just because it's just showing the world like this is what we can offer.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you push it out on YouTube. It's not necessarily in terms of YouTube, like a viral
no.
hit, but that's mm-hmm. not necessarily its intention. You're pushing towards tastemakers and trying to get some articles written. Where did the decision to sort of go out to festivals factor in for you guys as well?
I think when we shot it, we already knew we wanted to submit it to the New York Television Festival.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wrote and shot a pilot 2 years ago in the festival. It was the same
year.
You were it was the dad's yep. show. What was it? Was it called Dad?
Good Dads,
yeah.
And you had the one with Broussard in the school.
Yeah,
right?
It was yeah. Classless, yeah. yeah. And I thought it was a pretty good experience, and I really enjoyed it, and I just felt there was no reason not to submit to the New York Television Festival, regardless of when we decided to put it online. And so that was like the big festival that we wanted to get into. And then, you know, we submitted to Northside, we submitted to Dublin, Webfest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mainly our director was submitting all this stuff,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Shane Tilston. He knew some people from Montreal.
Yeah.
And like he was just like kind of like we'd get emails every once in a while like, hey, submitted for the Dublin Web Fest, keep your fingers crossed. Like, all right, cool, like this is great.
Yeah, Shane wore so many hats in this
yeah.
In this series. Like not only did he direct it, he edited it all himself, yeah. he produced it.
Yeah.
And like after, you know, we had it out there, he was still pushing it. Sending it to everybody he knows because he yeah. works in the industry. He's a line producer of VH1.
Cool.
And so he really just sent it out to anybody he could think of.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been, you know, our biggest advocate.
Yeah.
What has the sort of festival process done for you guys? What have you gotten out of that experience?
Representation.
Yeah, representation.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, that was probably the biggest thing out of the New York Television Festival. We got agents and a manager.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. yeah.
So then, you screens publicly and you get a meeting off of that?
What happened is it screens to all the industry, like agents, managers, production companies,
yes.
and other...
Yeah, just other industry people.
Other industry folks. And then as the festival approaches, they decide who they want to take meetings with.
Cool.
And so, you know, all of... It's so crazy because in the last year we did get a number of meetings and had phone calls with people based off of articles that were written.
Yeah.
But I think we probably had, you know, 10 times the traction in a matter of 4 days at the New York Television Festival.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, we got 13 meetings out of it during the festival. It was a whirlwind kind of week, but it was like very cool. And like, it just kind of, showed us like that the New York Television Festival is like, I mean, just took the other candidates to like another level and like got us in like a lot of doors and stuff that we really, I never thought we could get.
Yeah, absolutely.
Agents and managers out of this. You
and
know,
it was also, cool. And it was also the, Montreal Just for Laughs pitch competition yeah. that we did that we started working with an entertainment lawyer.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, they happened to be in the audience watching our pitch presentation
yeah.
and emailed us a week later saying, let's meet. And, you know, they were, you know, they gave us so much guidance just leading
yeah.
up to the festival.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, a lot of stuff with the festival, they just kind of gave us, you know, just helpful emails and all mm-hmm. doing it, you know,
just a lot of
very kindly.
A lot yeah. of guidance. A
lot of guidance, yeah.
yeah.
What was, let's talk about that one specifically. So that festival, what was that process like? So you, it's a pitching competition? Or
yeah,
is it just
so,
a pitching opportunity?
So essentially, there's five finalists.
Yes.
They each get 5 minutes to pitch their show to a panel of judges.
Yeah, a panel of... people from websites, production companies.
Yeah, there was like Walter Newman, who works in development at Adult Swim, was there.
Yeah.
The founder of My Damn Channel.
Yeah. And there was a couple Canadian-based
yeah, from
websites.
Like CBC.
Yeah.
Right? And so you're pitching the panel, and...
So it's a little like Shark Tank.
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
You're pitching like a product, definitely.
And you pitched the other Kennedys.
We did.
So
we
you're
did.
Pitching a product that you have some sort of like video sample of.
Yes.
That's
yes.
another big part of it.
So okay. there were other there were other people pitching in the same slot as us who didn't necessarily have a full series, but they maybe had a teaser or a sizzle reel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, they would, you know, screen that for 30 seconds or a minute, mm-hmm. and then they'd do their spiel.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we kind of, just being performers and like it's a stage and we wanted to perform because, yeah. you know, we're in Montreal. It's like the sole reason we're there. We might as well, you know, do a show, a 5 minute bit. We performed.
Most people treated it like an actual pitch.
Yeah, like a general meeting pitch where you sit down and like pitch your series. But we came dressed as like Steve Jobs in like black turtlenecks, black jeans, and pitched it like it's a fake TED Talk.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so we had like these headsets, like these Xbox headsets, like the Mickey D's headsets, uh-huh. and it had a wire that was dangling, and it was clearly not plugged into anything, and glasses, and we entered from the back of the room, so instead of like going up to the side.
Yeah, and it was a good 40 yards. Yeah. It felt like
it was like a 40 second walk. So then when they introduced us, we just started going, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we did that for, yeah, probably
a
40.
Good amount of time. Yeah.
And then we just pitched it like a TED Talk and had a slideshow and were silly and goofy and dumb.
Yeah. Cause they had an audience there to watch the proceedings. So we're like, might as well play to the audience as well as the industry people on stage.
Absolutely. I mean, and we weren't concerned about winning really. Cause like, you know, it's a great competition, and it's just getting to go to Montreal and being part of the Just for Last Festival is an incredible experience.
Incredible.
But the competition itself, the winner wins, like, I think, passes to go back the next year. So it's not like there's a development deal at stake or anything like that.
Right.
So we were more concerned about being the funniest people there as opposed to, like,
I think we won that.
Have
I
the best pitch.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it was great.
It was great.
Is there a video of that?
We've been emailing them trying to get it, but
I think they destroyed it. I don't think they liked it.
It's definitely
they don't want to encourage other people.
Yeah,
it's definitely there somewhere because they had like three cameras filming it.
Yeah, we were on it like TV screens and stuff so people could see it. I was very proud of it.
It was super fun.
It was super fun.
Yeah,
that's great. So it sounds like the festivals have had some very tangible sort of like results for you guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And as part of the New York Television Festival as well, you also, in addition to your acting accolades, which you can put that trophy on your shelf.
Yeah, we have a lot of acting accolades. Definitely.
You've also got that development a development award as well.
Yes.
From Comedy Central.
Yeah.
How's that sort of like process been for you guys?
It's great. It's not like a paper development deal per se. It's more sort of a award of recognition, which leads to
talks with them.
Meetings with Comedy Central in hopes that we can develop something together.
It's just an open door.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think they like us and they like what we've done, and you know, hopefully we can like work together.
Yeah,
in the future.
That's great.
If you guys are listening out there.
So it sounds like, and am I missing anything else about the sort of like rollout and release? That's the main thing. Those are the main like prongs that I was aware of.
I don't think so. I mean, we did have a premiere show where we had some comedians perform and we screened a couple episodes just sort of like get people excited about it, which was fun. Like Josh Gondelman performed.
Julio Torres. Yeah.
Girls with Brown Hair.
Yeah,
Sam Reese and Becca Chacon. Other than that, that's about it.
Because it just sounds like you guys were very sort of like thoughtful about the way that you wanted to sort of like roll this out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And get the response that you were looking for.
Yeah.
Out of it,
absolutely. And we actually were very interested in having another site take on the project.
Sure.
And you know, we even, you know, emailed it to people like, you know, Above Average and Used to Be Comedy.
I didn't get that email.
It was Todd Bieber.
Big shout out to Todd Bieber.
Big shout out to Todd Bieber. And I think it had to do with that you guys had like a full docket.
Yeah, he said he really liked it, but it's just he couldn't release it for like 3 months.
And we didn't want to wait that long.
Yeah, we couldn't wait.
But we did send it to like a number of sites being like, you know, we have this project already. We're really proud of it. We would like to, you know, put it on a site that has more reach than our YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reception was really, really good, but I think it came down to, you know, they wanted to put projects that they had a hand in developing, which we totally get.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was worth a shot.
Yeah. I think it was like bad timing for the places we did send it.
Yeah,
maybe
for sure.
Their voices are a little different at the time and they weren't really going for shorter stuff. They were still doing like a little longer videos.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it can be hard, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like you've sort of done the crafting of the voice of this thing and everybody sort of wants their fingerprints on it if they're going to like represent it like
yeah.
part of their
yeah.
brand too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's really cool. I mean, I guess like it's definitely like really great to sort of hear a story that is like about you sort of have an intention, and you sort of like fulfill it. For you guys in putting it together, if we back, we roll the clock backwards.
Sure.
So mm-hmm. we're like, you guys have been working together for how long at this point? How'd you first get started together?
We met here at UCB taking mm-hmm. improv classes.
Yeah.
We started performing on an indie improv team called Casual Sex Offenders.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I remember we used to do shows at the Creek with you guys.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And then, about 3.5 years ago, we started doing sketch comedy together.
Just doing live shows. I think our first show was Cool Shit, Weird Shit down the Triple Crown Basement.
We started doing sketch together sort of by chance. I agreed to do Cool Shit, Weird Shit was a show for those who don't know listening. It's Matt Denny and Josh Sharp. They still do it at UCB East, but they used to do it at the basement of the Triple Crown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wrote a bit about Tab, the Diet Cola. And it was a really dumb bit. It was pretty much just like me saying the word tab like 200 times in 6 minutes. And, you know, I come out with like a gym bag of tab and read tab facts and sing a song.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so stupid. I was too scared to do it by myself. And I was like, Marshall, will you please do this with me? And
I was like, oh, yes. Okay.
But like as we rehearsed it, Marshall sort of added lines here and there and like added this like voice and he was this awkward guy. And it just added an element to it that wasn't there.
Yeah.
And when we performed it, it like killed and we loved it. And everyone's like, you guys should do sketch together. And we're like, okay.
Yeah.
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 And it seemed like very quickly you guys started doing a lot together. Your output has been pretty high.
We try. Like, yeah. I mean, we always set a goal to try to release a video a month, but like that has not happened. It's just, it's so hard. There's such a finite amount of like resources and time, especially like when you're working a full-time day job.
Sure.
Was
video always a component even from very early on or was it mostly stage and then
it was a mix of both.
Yeah.
It was a mix of both.
Yeah. So we started doing videos, started doing live sketch, did festivals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put up a couple Spanx at UCB, did Backyard Brawl.
Yeah, we were 13-time champions at Backyard Brawl.
Yeah.
That was huge for us because that we set a precedent. We had to write at least one new sketch a month.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. sometimes there'll be one or two new sketches.
Yeah.
So and in that 13-month span, I think we ended up writing like 30 new sketches.
Yeah,
or
we did one spank and got a big no, and then we're like, all right, fine, we have 5 more sketches we can do immediately, and I think we resubmitted the next month a whole different show.
And got another big fat no.
Big fat no.
We've never been good at like doing theme shows.
Yeah.
But
we can't, we've never mastered the stage show, a half hour show. We can do a 4 or 5 minute bit, but the 30-minute show is the thing we haven't mastered yet.
I mean, it's its own discipline, right?
Yeah,
totally.
For sure.
It's a different beast.
We started making these videos, and I think, you know, in the last year or so, or last year and a half, we started focusing more on video than live sketch.
Yeah.
We still try to perform live when we can, but mm-hmm. It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard.
It was kind of an organic transition. It was almost like we're doing a lot of stuff together, and some of this stuff is maybe also tailored for video.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where did you look for as far as, like... do you guys have filmmaking, like a filmmaking background as well, or were you looking outside for that aspect of the process immediately?
Yes, no. I mean, I didn't study film, but I still work in production.
Mm-hmm.
Like I when I first moved to New York, I was a production assistant in TV and film.
Yeah.
And I did that for 4 years, and I was a set PA on 30 Rock and Law and Order and a bunch of shows and films. And then I transitioned to commercials. So I do logistically have a good grasp on what it takes to take whatever you have on the page and
you got a good director's eye for shots and like the feel of a sketch and everything, the feel of videos and stuff.
But I still don't have like a lot of technical grasp of stuff. Like I'm not a director, I'm not a DP, I'm not an editor. So, but I've been lucky enough, and both of us have been lucky enough in the last few years to meet people that want to collaborate with us.
Yeah.
And so we've had a good group of friends who have been directing and editing with us. Our friend Nick Bernadone, he's a writer's assistant on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Cool.
He directed a lot of our early videos.
Yeah.
And then we sort of found Shane through a mutual friend.
Yeah.
And that's when we were about to do Kennedy's. And it just, we met with him and just sort of clicked.
Yeah.
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 And, but as far as like the way that your stuff has sort of come together, it hasn't been like there's another direct counterpart always. It's sort of like based on the project, you sort of bring people in.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Totally.
Yeah. I think for a long time, Nick was our guy. And, yeah. But he's like really busy with his job right now. I mean, they work long hours.
Right. Because your pilot was with him too.
Yeah.
Right?
Nick, mm-hmm. I wrote that with Nick and Nick directed it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we started working with Shane like a year and a half ago, and he's more or less been our guy.
Yeah.
A good friend of mine, Aaron Rosenblum, directed a sketch we did. It was a Law and Order theme song sketch, which was great, which we really loved. But more or less, we've just been trying to do all of our stuff with Shane.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his background, you said he's a line producer in
commercial
world or?
No, in TV. So he used to work at MTV. He line produced for Nikki and Sarah Live and Hey Girl and a bunch of other shows. Now he's at VH1. But he, you know, has always like on the side written and directed, and that's what he really wants to do in the long run. So, you know, he's been incredible.
Yeah. And so I guess like as far as like how this specific project too like comes to be. So you're doing a lot on the stage, doing a lot in video, but sort of like one-offs, and you're sort of saying smaller stuff, that's where your sort of focus has been. So this was also intentioned to be something you were taking a bigger crack at, a series type thing together?
I think more than anything, we wanted something where we were playing more of a version of ourselves.
Yes.
Like these characters are ridiculous and they are dumb, but like most of our sketches, we were, you know, we're big characters, like wacky characters, like Marshall said.
Like it was like yelling sketch.
Like wearing wigs and stuff. Yeah. So we wanted to write and make something where we were playing something a little more grounded in reality.
Sure.
And we were, you know, showing ourselves on camera.
Yeah. And we wanted to make it look especially good, not just like a, you know, like, you know, not anymore, but like when we were first writing it and talking about it, like a lot of like web series they just look like web series instead of like a television show or a film. We wanted to make like a Wes Anderson type of film. It's just the look of it and the feel, but for the web basically. Yes. And I think like, you know, Arlen Kamapaki, the guy who shot it, made it look gorgeous.
He was also an improviser.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
James had a class with way back when.
Yeah. No, we took a Will Hines
class
together. Couple years ago when we were on a team for a year, and he improvised in Canada for a long time, but he's a DP by trade. Like that's his job full time. Like he directed and shot a short film that was in the Toronto Film Festival. And
awesome.
I know like last year he was in like Dubai DPing a feature.
I think he's doing stuff with Sypha now.
He's doing something with Sypha Sounds and Christian Capizzoli right now.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But like he was doing us a huge favor by like coming in and doing
shooting the goofs in Maine. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, he's a good friend, and he was willing to take the time off to do it, and to do it for like a much lower rate than he usually gets paid for. And it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were very grateful.
That's also the fun thing about comedy though, right? Is because it's like, if the project is fun and funny enough, you can find, you can.
Yeah.
You know, also you have to be cool.
And
like, yeah, but like, you know, you can find people who are willing to sort of like take it on because it's like, oh, this is fun, whereas it's not necessarily like, oh, I gotta go do that.
Yeah,
yeah, it was a fun shoot. It worked out really well. Like,
we were up there for four days,
3.5 days.
And you know, I drove everybody in like a 15-pass van.
Yeah,
with like it was me, Marshall, Shane, Gary Levitt, who was our sound mixer, Arlen, and two actors that were also in the series with us, Annie Berry, who used to be on a Herald team with Marshall, and
Graceland.
Mary Ellen Gerald, who I knew from working on 30 Rock.
Cool.
Yeah, and we shot it up in my family's like summer house. So we just like stayed there for 3.5 days.
Yeah.
Days, and it was just like,
and the weather was beautiful.
And
you know, we had nothing to do there except to work. So, you know, we'd wake up super early, make breakfast for everyone, and then, you know, sort of break down what the shot list was for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere we were shooting was essentially within walking distance of the house. It was either in the house or like 100 yards.
The 100 yards. Like it's next to a golf course.
Yeah.
And then there's like, you know, the tennis courts or, you know, like, you know, 500 yards from, you know, where we shot the golf.
How much of what you had going up into that space? Because I think, like, just literally locations was going to be the next question I had, because I think especially that aspect of it stands out as, like, a really wonderful additive part of that world that really sells it.
Absolutely.
You know?
I think the production value is, like, is a big part of the drive. Yeah. Totally. The majority of the drive for the series.
I took James and some other people, like all of, most of CSO, mm-hmm. casual sex offenders, up to my family's summer house. And ever since then,
it's about 4 years ago.
Yeah. Ever since then, James, like, we got to shoot something here. There's this, it's too cool of a place not to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I remembered the location. I remembered, you know, not only the areas in the house, but the areas outside of the house and that there was a golf course just like 100 yards away. And there was a tennis courts. What's that type of clay?
Rubico.
Yeah. Rubico. It's like green, thick clay.
Yeah. It's like a more of a pellet than like clay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I remember sort of all the areas around that we had visited during the weekend. And so I think when we sat down to write the episodes, we wanted to exploit all the locations we possibly could.
Yeah.
And how much of what you had on paper is what you wound up shooting? All of it.
Yeah.
So you had planned out every, it wasn't like you got up there and you figured out a bit based on a new space at all. It was like you knew what you wanted going up.
Yeah. The
sunrise.
The sunrise. And then we wrote one, but we didn't shoot it.
There were two that we didn't shoot because of time.
Yeah.
There was one that I wrote up while we were driving up there. I came up with it, or it was like the night before or something, because I wanted to shoot a sunrise.
Yeah.
But it was really a sunset in reverse. Yeah. but
big shout out to Arlen for making that possible.
Yeah. But there was really not a ton of improv on set. Like all of the improvised lines came from when Marshall and I like went through the script over and over and over again. And like we probably revised the drafts like 3 or 4 times until we thought it was, you know, ready to go.
Yeah. And I think we thought of maybe like 1 or 2 promos while we were up there.
Yeah.
I think the one where it's sliding across the table and you see all the Kennedys and then you see us too.
Yeah.
I thought of that on the drive up.
I think.
Yeah.
I think, improvisation in film's great, but I think when you have such a tight schedule and you have so many factors to sort of take into consideration, like, there just isn't a lot of room for it.
Yeah. Like there's at one point, I think the second to last day, the kayak episode, there's a dock right there and it's an old dock. It's like as old as I am. And like, the guy who takes care of our house, it was really windy that day. I mean, there's like 30 to 40 mile an hour gusts. And he's like, "Hey, you guys almost done? Because I need to anchor that thing down or it's going to float away to the ocean." And like, I could see it moving back and forth. And I think it came loose at one point.
Uh-huh.
And he had to run over and like kind of tie it. Like, because there's like a landing area that's like supposed to be like anchored down. And it's not while we're there. And like, you know, during the winter it is, but like, I mean, it almost broke away into the ocean. And like, when we were leaving, I'm like, "We're leaving. I'm so very sorry." And he like could tell, he was just like, "You were making my job so much harder by doing this goof fest."
Yeah. I just think unless you have the luxury of having like 3 camera guys rolling at the same time and they're like all shoulder mounted and like doing like a 3 camera ISO, like you really just can't. You can't improvise unless you have unless you have a huge pad in your schedule.
Yeah, we really didn't. We shot 12, 14-hour days.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then for all the days, except for the last one. It was like just 6.
Yeah. I mean, literally every episode seems to have a really dynamic, beautiful look. That episode you guys shot with like the fog on the tennis court, incredible.
Yeah, I wish we could take credit for it.
Yeah, thank Maine weather. It was September, so it wasn't the summer.
Yeah.
So you had the kind of the fall kind of weather kind of coming in. And that fog rolled in like that morning, I think.
Yeah.
And we just kind of rolled over and it just looked like
it was beautiful.
It was totally beautiful.
It was serendipitous.
Yes.
There's also an element, I think, of what makes that connects to what is really like beautiful and unique about the series too, which is that, like, when you get out of the city, I think this is true in New York and in LA, when you get away from the places that are like kind of like immune to production a little bit, or used to it, and a little bit like, fuck you, pay me for it.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Like, you also wind up with something with a very different dynamic. You have people who are willing to be nice to you.
Yeah.
As you're doing something that is totally not necessary, but that is like, in that circumstance, just less frequent. So it's a little bit more like chilled out.
Absolutely.
Makes your life a little bit easier in what you're trying to get.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? And there were times when we'd be nervous, like, shooting on the golf course, because people are still playing on golf. the golf course.
Yeah. Like, it's a summer town, but like there's still a couple people that live there year round, and then those couple people were playing golf that day, and they kind of looked at us when they were walking up, and then they saw me, and they're like, "Oh, Stratton, what are you doing? What is it? When is this going to be on TV?" I'm like, "Probably never." the people in the town we got very lucky. If we shot in the summer, I don't think it would have happened, just because like the amount of traffic around and the golf stuff wouldn't have happened because people were on the golf course all day long.
Right.
You know, so we're going to shoot it originally in the summer, like in June or July. My family was up there and didn't want to like disturb them. Mm-hmm. And we just wanted the house ourselves. So we shot it like in September, and I think we really lucked out because it was like the last possible time we could do it before we had to close the house down for the winter. And I think it made the series. I don't think it would have happened without that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Have we talked about this? You know that I'm from Maine?
No, and we haven't talked about it.
Where's your family's house?
Biddeford Pool. It's about 20 minutes outside of Kennebunkport.
Sure.
In like South Maine.
No, I can dig it, man. I'm from Farmington.
Okay,
is,
yeah.
This is
the
for
woods.
An audience of nobody.
So the woodsy area of Maine, yeah.
But my family has a house that's closer to Damariscotta, which is like a little bit more like mid-coast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's gorgeous. I mean, Maine is, everyone should go to Maine. It's the most gorgeous state in the entire.
One of our good friends just moved to Maine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Jeff Ross. He was in our improv group.
Oh,
CSO.
I saw that. Yeah.
He moved to Portland, Maine. He and Rob King are writing for an online comedy network called Crisp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've seen a couple of people from New York start that migration.
It's tempting.
It
happens. Yeah. It happens. Man.
It's great. It's a great area.
Yeah. A friend of mine from college moved up there, you know, and he's from Long Island. And so now my parents are like, "Well, he's from New York and he moved to Maine. When are you coming back?"
Yeah.
Constantly. That's really funny. Yeah. Let's get back to something someone might actually be interested in.
Okay.
So what are you guys working on now? What's sort of like the next steps for Coker and Stratton?
Well, I think what was interesting about everything that happened in the festival and getting representation, all the meetings started with like 10 seconds of like congratulations, and then okay, you have like a whole lot more work to do.
Yeah. We kind of like, in all of this, like we didn't stop writing, but we just stopped like writing pilots and, you know, stuff that like we can shoot, not just like another web series or something. Like we have ideas for a second season and like some episodes mapped out, but we really kind of like, I guess stopped all that a couple months ago.
I don't know.
Yeah. And like, now, like after all these meetings, we have like so much work to do. With like just making more stuff.
Yeah, so we have three different shows that we're, you know, interested in developing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have one pilot script, three treatments, and we're starting to write all of them essentially right
now.
So essentially it's starting to develop and write something that we can actually sell a longer form platform.
Longer form.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. It's the funny catch of short form stuff is that, like, in its best form, what it leads to is the need to sort of like double down and work on some longer form stuff, which is a slower burn.
Yeah,
it's less immediately gratifying.
Absolutely, it's you know, a lot of, you know, these videos and web series we do, it gets you in the door, but it's not going to keep you there.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's great. This was great. What else do you have?
Sure.
And you know, I think that was sort of a rude awakening for us, but at the same time, we had been working on a script and a few other things. So, you know, we were somewhat ready, but still.
Yeah, still not completely ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can dig it. Well, glad to hear that it sort of like opened some doors. Like, it seems like you guys have a good sort of like, have a strategic mind for this stuff. Congrats on all the success, and hopefully it continues to go well.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
And that will do it for episode number 17 of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thank you to Marshall Stratton and James Coker for taking the time to talk with me. Thank you out there in the world for listening. This show doesn't happen without you. And honestly, we could still use some likes, some stars, and some reviews on iTunes. We're very We're very light on that end of things. Wouldn't you say, Ben? We're very light, next to none. So please join the revolution and review this podcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, on Google Play, and check out all the podcasts on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. You can also find us on YouTube and Vimeo with new videos almost every single day. /UCB Comedy, Twitter, Instagram, the whole thing at UCB Comedy. Come to our theaters if you live in New York and LA. Take a class. Do whatever you want. But please review this podcast. That's the main thing. Thank you again for tuning in. And until next time, we'll see you on the internet.